Subscribe to the Nightlife Podcast, now featuring the whole first hour every day, with interesting discussions, panels and topics, as well as the shorter weekly food and travel. abc.net.au/nightlife.
It is our Boxing Day book club here. I should mention my name is Dom Knight, filling in for Indira this and next weekend as she takes a break and probably enjoys some books herself, I would suspect. If you've got a book that turned up under the tree yesterday and you've been reading furiously and you want to let us know what you think, or just another book that you came across this year and loved, over the next hour of the show we're going to hear reviews on a range of books from, including such things as an exquisitely written novel following twin sisters who end up living two very separate lives, to a memoir of a woman who escaped a childhood home dominated by a violent father, some sci-fi, some looks into a possible future, and one of the more fascinating novels of the past few decades as well, with a fresh view on it. A book's called O. We're also going to take a look at some of the major award winners of 2020 and some of the trends in publishing, what kind of stuff was selling. So our guests tonight, first we have Potts Point bookseller Simon McDonald. Hello, Simon.
How are you, Dom?
Very, very well. What a strange year it must have been to work in retail.
It has been strange, but as you were mentioning a little bit earlier, we were very well supported by our local community, which we greatly appreciated.
Excellent. So we'll talk more about that as it goes along. Also, Morgan Smith from Glee Books. Hello, Morgan.
Hi, Dom. How are you?
Not too bad. What was your year like at Glee Books?
Oh, it was very strange. We did do the home deliveries. I was driving around my local area, which was really interesting, Marrickville and Dulwich Hill. Very large suburbs, both of them, and I got to see a lot of nooks and crannies I didn't know about, so that was quite good.
And so there you go. So both of you from very book-loving areas of Sydney and proud independent booksellers of the sort that it's always fun to walk into a shop and just see heaps of well-curated and thought-through books. Let's start. You've each got a list of five. I might alternate between the two of you and just get some recommendations going. And please get your pens ready. I hadn't heard of all of these, so fascinated to get the chance to add to my list. Let's start with you, Simon. What can you recommend?
One of my absolute favourite books of the year was Infinite Splendours by Sophie Laguna, where she sort of exquisitely and compassionately and wrenchingly transmutes the legacy of trauma into art. The book sort of framed as a tragedy from the start. The story ominously builds towards a heinous act that shapes the life of a young boy named Lawrence, then cuts forward in time to suffuse readers in the consequences, the shame, the loneliness, the hurt, the gnawing sense of something undone, and the elusive chase to make himself whole again. What I loved about it most about it was that there's no mechanical plot that sort of grinds to a Hollywood conclusion. There's no contrived test for Lawrence to pass in order to move forward with his life. This book is about sort of the transmission of trauma and how a single act of child abuse essentially can derail a life and diminish its potential. It's absolutely confronting, but sort of brilliant. It's dark material, but the prose is luminous. She's such a talent, Sophie Laguna, one of Australia's best writers. And the book is harrowing, but it's a true masterpiece.
Yeah, it does sound a tad harrowing, but I don't know. This was a year when I felt harrowing was kind of my state of mind. I didn't mind things playing in that space at all. It was kind of felt realistic for much of this
absolutely.
Year, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, most of my favourite books this year tended to sort of fall into the category of the traumatic and, harrowing. And I don't know why that was. I think it was just, a reflection of the mood of 2020.
Yeah, well, Sophie Laguna, a bit of a critical favourite, isn't she? She's been getting rave reviews for quite some time now.
Absolutely. She's won the Miles Franklin, and I think her books get better every time. She's, amazing, amazing writer.
Excellent. All right. Well, how about you, Morgan? Where are we going to start with your list?
Well, all I can say is you're braver, both of you, than me, because I had the Sophie Laguna book and I kept picking it up going, yes, I'm going to read this. I know she's a brilliant writer, but I just couldn't do it in the end. So I went for a lot more gentle sort of books, I think.
I can understand the logic of that, Morgan. I mean, we got enough trauma just looking at the news, I guess, but I don't know. I was a wallower, but not everyone is, and I'm glad we've got one of each tonight.
Yeah, and I think, you know, but it's like we're going to talk later about trends, you know, because there was that thing where I felt a lot of people just wanted to read, you know, sort of escapist stuff. But anyway, I think probably the favourite book of the year is also the winner of the Orange Prize. Oh, it's not called the Orange Prize in England anymore. It's just called the Women's Prize, which was Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell, which is a historical fiction based on the life of the Shakespeare family, if you like. William Shakespeare doesn't appear much in it at all. It's really based about his wife, Agnes, who is still living in Stratford-on-Avon while he is going around, you know, doing his plays and living in London.
Swanning around, yes.
And she is looking after the children, and the son, Hamnet, and apparently Hamnet is, at that time, was a name that was interchangeable with Hamlet.
Uh-huh.
So the historians feel that he wrote the play Hamlet after his son died. Maggie O'Farrell tells us in her afterword too that there's no record of what the son died of, but the plague was on. And the thing is that Shakespeare never mentioned the plague in any of his plays, but that's what was happening.
How
at
interesting.
The time that he was at the height of his fame.
Yeah, so all those exotic settings in Verona and various bits of Italy and places he may not even have been to, that was a bit of an escape in its own way, perhaps. Although
maybe it was, yes. But this novel is utterly beautiful. It's the characters just leap off the page. The writing is stunning. The descriptions of the English countryside and all of that is absolutely luminous, really. It's really very lovely book, and I highly recommend it to anyone who loves historical fiction. And as I say, Shakespeare himself is really sort of a side character. It's really this really remarkable woman who she paints the wife of Shakespeare as being this absolutely remarkable woman, incredibly in touch with nature, and a fabulous wife and mother, and that their marriage was, despite they had long times apart, was very passionate and loving. And, yeah, it's an absolutely beautiful book, really. I mean, it's sad because it is about grieving.
I was wondering that.
It's about the death of the boy.
Yeah.
But it's still very beautiful.
Yeah. One of the things I did this year in all the time I spent at home was wade through the Hilary Mantel trilogy about Henry VIII.
Yes.
And I'm sure a lot of people were catching up with that this year too. But this sounds not dissimilar in that it's, in some senses, you know, projecting the domestic life of someone who we know existed and but don't know a whole lot of the details of. That might be that sounds really intriguing. And I didn't know much about that period of history, so I really enjoyed getting into that time.
They're Hamnet. Wonderful books. Mm. Wonderful for Hilary Mantel's.
And yeah, I mean, poor old Shakespeare. You wouldn't have a son called Hamnet and write a play called Hamlet and it not be about your child, would you? That's recommended by Morgan Smith, one of our independent booksellers here on Nightlife. My name is Dom Knight. So back to you, Simon. What's the next stop on your tour of the books of 2020?
The next book is The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, which I suppose sounds like a sort of rehash of the traditional estranged sibling reunion narrative. But I think Britt Bennett, who wrote The Mothers a few years back, which was another exquisite book, she's sort of incapable of writing something so simplistic. The book is essentially about two black sisters. One is slightly lighter in skin tone than the other, who go their separate ways when they're young and reunite decades later. But the book's about identity and essentially how civilization has constructed and cemented and propagated our understanding of race and gender over sort of thousands of years, and how difficult it is for people to break away from society's sort of imposed categorization of every facet of our lives. But sort of the novel's themes are masqueraded behind Britt Bennett's rich, graceful prose and characters portrayed so, so honestly. You can almost see into their souls. There's not one false in the novel. It's absolutely brilliant, and one that we sold truckloads of this year. It was loved by many people, many of our readers.
Okay, so even though they look pretty much the same, just because of the slight tone variation, their life experience is vastly different.
Yeah, one sort of finds more acceptance in sort of in the white world, and sort of and the other stays closer to home. They have very different experiences, and it's just so magnificently done. The sort of the contrast in their lives, literally because of the slight different contrast of their skin tone, and sort of how such a meaningless thing like skin color can affect their lives so deeply. It's amazing what she does.
Yeah, well, in the year of global Black Lives Matter protests and very big protests here too.
One of the sisters is passing for white, actually living in a white suburb, married to a white man who himself doesn't know that she is actually a black woman.
Yeah,
and so that side of the novel I found really fascinating as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm very curious to read this. So there you go. That's Britt Bennett's with The Vanishing Half. How about you, Morgan? What's up next?
Let me go to an Australian book by the absolutely wonderful Amanda Lowry, who has written many beautiful books over the years. And she's a Tasmanian writer. Her most recent one is called Labyrinth, and probably could almost be seen as a kind of a sister novel, if you liked an earlier book she wrote called Vertigo. So in this book, a mother, a woman, I guess, in her 50s, buys a ramshackle house on the south coast of New South Wales, and she buys it because it's nearby a prison where her son is incarcerated for a crime that we don't know what it is for most of the book. And it's not important anyway, but it's about the mother's relationships with her son. She gets and her marriage and all of those things, but it's really just about a woman coming to terms with her life and looking back over her life. And The Labyrinth refers to the fact that she does actually start building a physical labyrinth in her garden.
Oh.
And through this, Lowry uses the metaphor of the labyrinth beautifully. So it sort of provides definition to the narrative, and all sorts of metaphors about what is going through the woman's mind. And it's a very small little town that she lives in, hasn't even got a pub or anything. And so all the neighbours, the people who live around, become really interesting characters. And one who comes, a young man that comes to help her build the labyrinth. And it's just exquisite. It's just the most beautifully written, exquisite novel. She's always written beautifully, Amanda Lowry, but she sort of keeps a low profile, as it were. She's not out there, promoting herself or, being everywhere. She just slowly just writes these stunning books, and it's really worth reading. I really highly recommend it. If you want, again, what I was saying before, a gentle, thoughtful, ruminative book.
I remember, Morgan, in a past interview with someone who was constructing a labyrinth in a park, learning that the notion of a labyrinth, sort of a path that you make your way through, was designed almost as a tool of meditation and of a sort of mental experience. And so it sounds the book itself has that function, or certainly had that to you as the reader.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Dom.
Oh, how interesting. So Morgan Smith of Glee Books with us and Simon McDonald from Potts Point Bookseller. Two independent booksellers talking about the books that really grabbed them in 2020 here on Nightlife. Some of the people who normally call in are just sleeping off a bit of pud or a bit of pavlova as I was today. And so what I'm going to do, I've got an only slightly dog-eared copy of certainly a book I've seen everywhere this year. Craig Silvey's follow-up to Jasper Jones. It's called Honeybee. If you don't mind, a slightly dog-eared and loved copy of Honeybee, it can be yours. And they're very big piles of honeybee. I don't even know. I haven't even figured out what it's about. But I gather it's another young man dealing with the challenges of life, not unlike Jasper Jones itself. Have you read that one, Simon? That's been walking out the door, I bet, in Potts Point.
I have, yes. It's another great one of the year. Obviously, anything with Craig Silvey's name attached after the success of Jasper Jones was going to fly out the door. But it's, again, a really well-crafted story about a young person trying to find their identity and fit into the world. They are sort of, they're struggling to fit in, struggling to find themselves, that, you know, their role in life, their purpose. And Craig Silvey sort of handles the characterization really deftly. He's a master of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, look, he really took his time on this one, so I'm glad to hear it's lovely. Certainly, it's just been ubiquitous when I've made my tours in recent weeks. Morgan, I bet that's doing. I'm just putting you on the spot with this because I've got a copy of it in front of me. But Morgan, I bet there's piles of that in your shops.
Oh yes, that was a fabulous seller over the Christmas period. It is just people have been so looking forward. People who love Jasper Jones have just been so looking forward to another new book by him. And, you know, again, it's on my pile to be read. I haven't got to it yet.
Yeah, me too.
But people who have, you know, the word is good on it, so that's lovely.
Yeah, I saw him years ago now at writers' festivals, and he's a very impressive young man. Just can write, you know, beautifully and emotively when he wants to, and also really funny. There's some extraordinarily amusing passages in Jasper Jones, despite being somewhat harrowing. Text in from Louise. Her best read of the year is Bruni by Heather Rose. She says, it's a cracking read that made me gasp out loud in several places. Set in Tassie with a bewilderingly large bridge being built from the mainland to Bruni Island due to family politics, Aussie and Chinese relations all involved. There you go. The number is 1-300-800-222 if you want to join the conversation. I think we're back to you, aren't we, Simon?
Yes, and maybe a slight change of pace. There's nothing I love more than a good crime novel or thriller this time of year when my brain can't handle much else. And my favourite of the year, without a doubt, was Either Side of Midnight by Benjamin Stevenson, which is his second book after Greenlight, starring the same character as that one. And in this book, disgraced television producer Jack Quick is hired by Harry Midford to investigate the murder of his brother. The thing is, Jack and the rest of the world are adamant it wasn't a murder, it was suicide, because they saw it on live television. Sam Mitford, a hotshot TV presenter, put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. And so the whole question that sort of the novel rotates around is, how can it possibly be murder when everybody saw what they saw? And it's so fantastically paced, full of red herrings and a plot that zigs and zags. It's unputdownable. It's if you're looking for a great summer page turner, that's the one.
That is such a great hook. A million people were watching, so how can it be murder? That's on my list right as we speak. Either side of midnight.
I had that one to start reading, so I'm very glad to hear it's so good.
We have another Morgan on the line. Morgan from Lauderdale. Hello, Morgan.
Oh, hello. How are you going?
Yeah, good. What book grabbed you this year?
The Gary Ablett, An Autobiography.
Oh, it's
all about his life.
Is this senior or junior?
Junior.
Oh,
junior.
Yeah. Just retired, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm only 22 years old, so I'm new to the whole AFL scene, but knowing incredible career.
Yeah, an absolute icon. Pretty tough being the son of someone so legendary that they call him God, but he's done pretty well. I'll tell you what, I mean, a lot of people buy books about great sportsmen and women this time of year. I mean, that's just one of the absolute stalwarts of Christmas purchasing. Thank you very much, Morgan.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to send you Honeybee. You can try a novel on for size. Just hang on the line. We'll get your details and get that out to you.
Thank you very much.
And I did mention that it's slightly dog-eared just for our own legal protection here. Gosh, a lot of people have been buying biographies, though. My brother loves a good rock biography. I got to admit, at this time of year too. So sport, right, just the real people with interesting lives always do pretty well, don't they, Simon?
Absolutely. I mean, this year, without doubt, the best-selling autobiography or memoir was, I mean, Barack Obama's, which came out, you know, 6 weeks ago or so, but people couldn't get enough. It's a giant 1,000-page tome. But, yeah, Barack Obama's book was, without question, one of the best-selling books of the year.
Yeah, I got that under my tree, and I could tell what it was just by the sheer heft of A Promised Land. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to reading that. I tell you what, it seems it's a rule. As soon as you leave office, even you'd think that you'd have a holiday and just do nothing for years, but they just have these giant book deals. We had Malcolm Turnbull came out at the start of the pandemic. Kevin Rudd, I mean, it feels like he's written about 8 books about his time in office. I think it's 2 very big ones. This is big stuff. Morgan, what's been doing well in biographies, just to divert slightly to that at Christmas?
There have been some fantastic biographies out this year, actually, and autobiographies, some really good memoirs. And now you've put me on the spot because I can't.
That's all right. We didn't. I'm just throwing things randomly, if anything grabbed you, but I'm sure there
were. In my mind, yeah. No, I can't think of anything in particular, but I've got my next book that I want to talk about.
Let's get back to the list, please. Yes, thank you, Morgan. Yep. Let's do that.
So Rebecca Solnit. Rebecca Solnit is an American essayist. She's a non-fiction writer. She's written about 20 books on various wide and varied subjects. She's written books like about New York and New Orleans. She's written a book about the joy of walking. She has just been one of those under the radar writers that only certain people have known about for many years, until she wrote a couple of years ago a book called Men Explain Things to Me.
Ha, that's a great title.
Which is, that's where this the word mansplaining came from.
Oh, really? Well, that's a great contribution to the language, and something that many are guilty of.
She didn't coin it herself, but it came from that title. Mm. So she has written a memoir called Recollections of My Non-Existence.
Oh, that's a great title too.
I know. And like everything she does, it's not what you expect. She's not going to write about the ins and outs of her love life or her childhood or anything like that. It's an absolutely wonderful book about how she became a writer. So it starts when she's 18 and she is living in San Francisco and finds this apartment, which she ended up living in for like 15 or 16 years, a rented apartment. And it was in that apartment that she became the writer she is. And a lot of what she talks about is the situation for young women, and how women, young women in particular, can feel invisible, and that's why she's talking about herself as being non-existent.
Oh, okay.
That she hasn't got agency in the world when she's that young, and that you know, and we all know about, you know, violence against women, and so much of that does happen to younger women because they are so fragile, they are so vulnerable. But she writes about all of this with the most incredible intelligence and compassion. And there's a whole group of these young American women. Oh, she's not that young anymore, she's in her 50s, but these women writing the most incredible nonfiction in America, and mixing popular culture and memoir and fiction and academic research and bundling it all together into this hybrid of fascinating work. Yeah, there's a lot of really good writing going on there.
Rebecca Solnit, Recollections of My Non-Existence, as recommended by Morgan Smith on our Boxing Day book club here on Nightlife. We have Simon McDonald with us as well from the Potts Point Bookshop. Morgan's from Glee Books. And we're going to take some more recommendations in a moment, but we've got Josephine on the line from Hawthorne.
Good evening. Is it Dom?
It is Dom Knight. I should have mentioned, yes, back with you again for Nightlife. What's your book of 2020?
I've got a book. It's a book written by Barry Jones. Now, he's an ex-politician. I think he was a minister in the Labor government.
That sounds right, yes.
Yeah, and he's written this book, which I've yet to sort of finish reading, but it's actually a follow-up to his bestseller about the emergence of post-industrial society. But this particular book he talks about smartphone and social media, which just has destroyed our sense of being members of broad, inclusive groups, our society as we used to know it. I mean, people nowadays, even my own children, they're sort of alienated from what I see as reality. They're sort of wrapped up in their head with their smartphones and iPhones and intelligent phones and all things like that.
Okay. But
the book is also about coronavirus.
Oh, well, so it's also from 2020. What's it called?
It's called... what is it called?
What is to be done?
What can be done, yeah.
Oh, yes, okay. I'm just looking it up.
What is to be done about our planet?
Well, he's known for being an intellectual, isn't he? He was the sort of mega brain of policy and so on. There you go. All right. Lovely. Thank you very much for that, Josephine. What is to be done, Barry Jones, with a look at where we are and where we might go. Any thoughts on Barry Jones? He's quite a well-known figure, I guess, Simon, before we move on to your next recommendation.
Just a book that sort of ticked along quite well over Christmas. I won't lie, it's not a book that I've actually read. I think I'm perhaps too young to understand his importance, but it's certainly one that we sold a few of over the Christmas period, yeah.
He was a science minister in the 80s. That's his major claim to fame, but sort of a public intellectual figure. There you go. And we can't possibly expect our booksellers to read everything on their shelves when you're busy working long hours, filling everyone's orders and keeping things stocked and keeping independent bookshops looking as gorgeous as they do when we walk in. Deb's texted, are you going to post a list of tonight's books? She missed a couple of titles. Yeah, we'll put one up on the Nightlife website, I guess, in due course. We'll do that, Deb. And perhaps we'll attach it to the recording of the first hour. That might be the thing to do. Okay, so I think we're up to Simon again, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm just going to take us back to sort of traumatic territory just for a moment.
Yes, look, it's still 2020 for a few days, so you're well within your rights.
The next book, Betty by Tiffany McDaniel, reminded me a lot of Roxane Gay's An Untamed State and Hanya Younger-Hira's A Little Life. It's inspired by generations of Tiffany McDaniel's own family, and Betty is a story of Betty Carpenter and her agonising childhood. She was born in a bathtub in 1954, and the sixth of eight siblings, to a white mother and a Cherokee father. And her childhood was suffused with tragedy and heartbreak, pockmarked by the poverty, racism, and violence embedded within the DNA of this small town in Ohio. It's an absolutely gut-wrenching coming-of-age story, graced by powerful and poetic prose. It's viscerally confronting, and with its depictions of violence and abuse, and it's certainly not for the faint of heart, and it is quite triggering. But it was a book that affected me most this year, I think. I cringed through it. I cried through it. But it's a book that I don't think I'll ever forget, if I'm honest.
Another book that grapples with the legacy of race and all those generations of tension and trauma in the United States, Simon. Morgan, you had a book on your list that seemed like a bit of a sci-fi a novel, Leave the World Behind. Can we chat about that?
Yes, it's not science fiction.
Oh, it's not science fiction?
No, it's I read a description of it that said it's a disaster novel without a disaster.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've kind of read up on it because it sounded intriguing and I must have misunderstood.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant, Dom. It's a wonderful book. I think it might win quite a few prizes next year.
Oh, good.
It was a bit of a surprise bestseller too. Word must have just been a word of mouth thing. I mean, I had a staff pick on it and was hand selling it, but people were coming in and just grabbing it. So there must have been something on the, you know, the Instagram feeds or whatever.
Oh, you're influential, Morgan.
Sorry?
You're influential.
Oh, yes, of course it was me, all me, yes. No, it's by an American, black American writer called Ruman Allen. And what happens is this young white couple rent a house out on Long Island for a holiday. And they are at the holiday house when one night an older black African-American couple knock on the door and say that they are the actual owners of the house. They've been in New York where all the electricity's gone, none of the trains are running, there's a total blackout. And they thought the best thing to do was to come to the house in Long Island, even though they knew they had tenant, you know, people renting it. And so there's this four people and two, and the young couple have two children as well. So these disparate couples who are dealing with this thing, then they suddenly see their mobile phones have gone off, that, you know, they don't really know what's happening in the outside world. At one point, the young man gets in the car to think he'll drive to the nearest town and see what the newspapers are saying or find out what's going on, but he gets lost and comes back none the wiser. And it's just, and the writer sort of moves between the characters, and then at other times he's writing in the third person, and we start to, the reader gets to know a little bit more about what's going on in the outside world, but you never really quite, it never turns into that thing where suddenly, like on the road there, you know, the road by what's his name, Cormac McCarthy, It never comes to this point where there's some major disaster happens. And that, so it's more about people's fear about, and about America today in a way too.
Yeah.
Feeds on all the fears and things about climate and racism and, you know, the overwhelmingness of technology in our lives. And it just plays into all these ideas, but written just so well, just so good. And everybody's is just having the best reviews everywhere.
Yeah.
I love this one too.
Did you read it, Simon?
Yes, it almost has like a Stephen King premise. You think it's sort of headed into that sort of well-worn territory, but you're so right. It's all about the characters. It's all about, the subtext. It's a great piece of writing. This is one of our sort of unexpected favourites and bestsellers of the Christmas period too.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal, yeah.
I'm very keen.
Isn't it great when that happens, when a book that, you know, the publishers haven't been pushing at you, that nobody's been carrying on about it, and then suddenly it just takes on a life of its own. I love it when that happens.
Yeah, I think the reason why I thought it was sci-fi was because this whole thing of technology breaking down, and I presume there must be some sort of, you know, alien invasion or something going on, but evidently it's much more subtle than that. But I gather it must have been written before COVID, which it makes extraordinary that, you know, this notion of everyday life breaking down
That's exactly right.
There you go. That may well.
But I also read, and how about this? I can't wait. Netflix are developing it with Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts.
Oh, of course they are.
Yes.
Yeah, of course they are. Well, is there any book Netflix isn't developing at the moment? But no, that's I don't know how they budget. They make hundreds of things a year. Anyway, that sounds great. Okay, so that's definitely going on the bedside table. Lovely. Now, I think, do we have one more each from each? I believe each of you before we talk about general trends as we do our Boxing Day book club here on Nightlife. Dom Knight in for Indira, who's having a bit of a break. We have Morgan Smith of Glee Books and Simon McDonald of Potts Point Bookseller. And despite the hope of optimism, these books are all feeling very 2020, which I really like. What's your final entry on the list, Simon?
My final book does have some slight science fiction overtones, I think, certainly dystopian overtones.
Great.
It's The Mother Fault by Kate Mildon Hall, which is about a woman in extremists. Her engineer husband is missing, last seen at the Golden Ark mine site in Indonesia. Everybody's looking for him, but the department, which is this all-seeing body of the enigmatic Australian government, is hunting him. His tracking chip that's planted beneath his skin, like the rest of the population, has gone dark, and now the department vultures are circling. They've taken Mim's passport. They've threatened to resettle her two children at the notorious Best Life institution, and they just tell her to stay in place and wait until the matter is resolved. But Mim sort of refuses this request in a society that's sort of so intent on stripping its population of all its autonomy. She decides to sort of go on a quest to find her husband and unlock the truth. It's sort of a literary thriller decorated with this luminous prose with meditations on motherhood and totalitarianism and love and independence and motherhood and fatherhood. It's such a great book. It's a real thriller, real page turner, but it's sort of packed with these heavy themes. It was an unexpected surprise. I didn't really know much about Kate's work prior to this, but this book sort of put her on my map, and I'll be reading everything she writes from now on, I think.
Yeah, goodness, that sounds like it was set during the future Zuckerberg presidency, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Fascinating. There you go. And look, just someone texted in to say that the author of that novel, Leave the World Behind by Rumaan Alam, that he was interviewed on RN a few months ago. So check that out and you can find out more about him. And so, Morgan, your final recommendation of the books of 2020?
Oh, good. Now, this one is totally out of the box, and I've cheated a bit because this isn't a book that came out in 2020. It's coming out in February.
Aha.
So it's something to look forward to.
Excellent. We'll probably need that last.
Yeah, so I thought rather than do something that was already out, then something I only finished this book today, and it's by the Melbourne writer Stephen Carroll, who's yet again another brilliant Australian writer. This book is called O. Now, I don't know, Simon will be too young. Dom, you just might know about an erotic novel that was published called The Story of O.
I've heard of it.
By Pauline Riage, her name was. It was published in the 50s in France, and it had very strong S&M sadomasochistic themes. Stephen Carroll has written the story of the woman who wrote that book.
Oh.
Who started out as a, not started out, but during the war became a member of the resistance.
Goodness.
And fell in love with this man who was married, but who worked for Gallimard Publishing, and she ended up working for Gallimard. So she is kind of a spy during the resistance. So the whole first part of the book is Paris during the occupation. And the book goes through basically from the war through to, in fact, the last section is in 1998, when she dies at the age of 90. Stephen Carroll has done this before. He wrote a beautiful set of novels based around the life of T.S. Eliot and T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets.
A bit more prudish, I suspect, than this woman. A bit more prudish, old T.S.
Yes,
Eliot.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, this book doesn't have anything of the novel she wrote in it, really. Mm. You know, there's nothing to be frightened of in the book, and because really it's a book about this woman who's having this very long-term affair with this married man, and at one point she thinks that his eyes are straying, that she's going to lose him, and they've had a discussion about erotica. And he says no woman could ever write, erotica. No woman could do it. So she does it to A, prove him wrong, but also as a sort of just a gift, if you like, a present that she wants to give him, hoping that it will stop him from straying.
All right.
But she writes it so well, and a lot of this is true. This is, but Stephen Carroll is fictionalizing it all. But the man is who is a publisher says it's so well written that it really should be published. And of course it created this enormous scandal. And she took this name Pauline Riage. Her name is in fact Dominique Horry. But she takes the name of another woman who's was a spy as well in the resistance with her during the occupation. And so there's all these sort of levels of who is this woman. And it's just, again, just brilliantly written. I love anything said in the publishing world or about writing and books and ideas. And that's what it is. And of course, a book about love, because she really just does love this man so much. It's a beautiful book. And Stephen Carroll, he just has this really special sensibility in these books he writes, and that are based on other writers.
Mm.
Apart from the Glenroy novels, which he wrote, which are set in suburban Melbourne and are a totally different thing altogether.
Yeah, this sounds like
yes, a... So it's coming out in February, and it's just a terrific, terrific novel.
So that's O by Stephen Carroll, forthcoming, recommended by Morgan Smith of Clear Books. We've got Simon McDonald from Potts Point Bookshop too on the Boxing Day Book Club. Can you just step back for a moment and just think about what readers have been enjoying, what the trends have been, what were the flops, what were the successes of the year? Simon, what was the year like, given all the closures and challenges and home deliveries? I gather, books were still being sold in decent numbers at your shop.
Absolutely, yeah. I think just the way we were selling books changes slightly. I mean, at the end of the day, we're still all the staff at the shop, readers, and we're all recommending books, and people still come to us specifically because of our personal recommendations. But when the doors had to close for that period of time, and we were selling books sort of from behind a closed doorway with a table, sort of separating us from customers, it was difficult, I'm not going to lie. But we did do the home delivery thing. We did a lot of click and collects and sort of online orders and posting things out. I don't think I've ever walked up to the post office so often as I did this year. But people still, people still read. And I think that's that's the thing that sort of kept us going. I think that, people wanted escapism. They wanted to escape, the world, whether it was through sort of fantasy or nonfiction, or even through cookbooks, which, had a huge surge in sales because people wanted to, spend their time doing something. It was a weird, very strange year, but I come away from it thinking, relieved and sort of happy that people did turn to books that sort of in these dire times.
How did that look to you, Morgan?
Yes, I concur with all of what Simon's just said. I think also we had, the sales just kept climbing and climbing and climbing after we reopened again. And leading up to Christmas, we basically, Dulwich Hill Shop, had the best Christmas we've ever had.
Oh, goodness, that's good.
10 years there now. And because the other thing is, if people have still got a job, they've got more money in their pocket because they're not going out to dinner. They're not taking the kids out for a day outing.
Yeah, no holidays overseas.
Yeah, no holidays overseas. So if, they were lucky enough to keep their jobs, as was I, they had more spending money basically, and a lot of people turned to books where that might be something that would be at the end of their list of things they'd spend, what do you call it?
Discretionary purchases kind of thing.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, discretionary purchases, but they really turned to books in a huge way.
That's great.
And, as Simon said, it was very heartening. Very, very heartening.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, people in the retail sector, you know, large people who sell homewares, you know, appliances and things like that have said that it was a very good year as people decorated their houses and tried to make the space nicer and did all the things they'd been putting off for months.
Yeah,
but I guess
exactly.
I'm glad people are doing that intellectually as well and reading up big. So what were the big books of this Christmas? I mean, what can we learn? Were there any unusual trends, Simon, the kinds of books being a bit different? Did crime do well? I know that you're a big fan.
Crime did well.
Yeah.
I mean, it did, yeah. Then there are a few good ones out that came out sort of in that peak period, things like the new Lee Child, you know, Jack Reacher thriller, but also books like The Searcher by Tana French, who I think is slightly more maybe literary, but we sold a lot of her Box 88 by Charles Cumming, and the new Chris Hammer book as well, Trust, you know, that ticked along really, really well. People did turn to those sort of page turners, I think, this Christmas. They were, you know, giving their friends and families books that sort of, take them away from current events. But also, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, things like Obama's A Promised Land, you know, kept on moving. And the Booker Prize winner, Shuggie Bain, was a star favourite long before it won the prize. And once that won, we couldn't keep that.
And you can't not mention Trent Dalton, Our Shimmering Skies.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there was a sort of knockout fight between the big three this year: Richard Flanagan with The Living Sea of Waking Dreams, Craig Silver with Honeybee, and Trent Dalton with All Our Shimmering Skies. There were these three sort of big names all competing in the same space, and they're all fabulous books.
That's very healthy for Australian fiction. We've got a chat with Chris Hammer actually from the week. I think it was on Tuesday night. We broadcast a literary lunch with him, so check that out on our podcast, our website. And we're going to put the list of the books that we've mentioned tonight up on the website too, because we keep getting texts asking for the details. Don't worry, we'll put that on the Nightlife Facebook page and the ABC website as well, so you won't have to miss that. We'll put this whole discussion up as well. Morgan, any more books to mention that you really think are the standouts of the year? We've covered a lot.
I'm sure there were lots of others. They've all gone out of my head now. They've read so much this year.
Well, it's after Christmas too, so you've shut down
honestly,
a bit.
Honestly, Christmas Eve was so busy. Simon's the same, I think. We're both pretty exhausted. You know, haven't quite got over it yet.
Well, good on you both for coming and chatting to us, you know, 2 days later on, very late on Boxing Day. I'm just glad to hear that the industry is doing so well, and that, I mean, I was terrified that all the local bookshops were going to finally close their doors, and I'm sure some retailers across the country did it tough, but really good to hear that people have been supporting, and also Australian writers.
Yes.
It seems to be a sort of golden age. Good old Richard Flanagan's put out so many extraordinary books now, but Craig Silvey's got another one out, and Trent Dalton keeping on going. So, I mean, Jane Harper is everywhere I look too, and the Dry movie's out too. So, the Aussie crime area seems to be in rude health too.
And there were some other sort of really good, interesting little Australian debuts that we might not have mentioned, like Lucky's by... I'm going to forget his name. Pippus, his name
Andrew
was.
Pippus, yeah.
And the girl is a dangerous, a lonely girl is a dangerous thing.
Great title. I keep seeing that around too.
Yeah, that's a real millennial book. I started reading it. I couldn't get it. I'm too old for this.
Simon's a younger man, so you've got about 30 seconds, Simon, before we have to head to the news. What? Any final thoughts or books you want to give a shout out to?
Possibly just The Yield by Tara June Winch, which won the Miles Franklin Literary Award and the New South Wales Premier's Literary Award, which is just such a fabulous book.
Brilliant.
I think if anyone looking for a great book to read, put that on your list.
I'm glad we got that in. Excellent. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us, Simon McDonald, at Potts Point Bookshop, very popular local store there in Potts Point. Thanks so much, Simon.
Thanks, Dom. Thanks for having me.
And Morgan Smith of Glee Books, which has several stores across the inner west in Sydney and the Blue Mountains too, I think. Is that still open? I'm not sure. Thanks, Morgan.
Yes, Blackheath, yes.
Brilliant.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Dom.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.